All right.
Yeah. But what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Nomadcast. My name is Caleb Enfield, and I'm the host of this show. On this show, I bring on Native American people that are doing cool things in their communities or that are just doing cool things at large. And it doesn't necessarily have to be tied to them being Native. So that's an even, you know, that's a very important part of it. But just before we get into it today, I do want to point out a couple things that I've left out this month. It is Native American Heritage Month. So anyone that's out there doing anything cool, helping Native peoples, or, you know, just a Native doing anything really cool, I'm proud of you guys. Thank you so much. That stuff's so important. And also this month, my girlfriend Cheyenne and I, we celebrated an anniversary, and that's cool. And I just wanted to shout it out because, you know, you don't get to shout those things out in public like this a lot. So just want to let her know I'm proud of her and proud to be with her. But anyway, oh man, they're recording me.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I made it on someone's Instagram. Today, I have a really cool guest on. His name is Ian Claw Allison. He's a podcast host just like I am. He's a Navajo Rez boy from Tuba City, Arizona. He's a husband, a father, a grad student, and a film lover. And he's just trying to, you know, make something exciting and do something big in his life, not let anything hold him back from spending time doing what he wants to do. And I appreciate that because that's exactly why I started Nomadcast. You know, I just didn't want to be limited by anything. So welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks a lot. Happy anniversary, you and your girlfriend. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks, man. I know it's kind of a rambly intro and I usually try to keep them short, but it's, I don't know, man. It's important.
You know, 100%. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, of course, man. Thanks for coming, man. It was really fast. It was really short notice, you know, but I've listened to several of your episodes already. I've been trying to catch up. I'm not quite there yet, but I've really enjoyed it. Speaking of which, his podcast is called Native Film Talk. It's a podcast where he talks about Native films or Natives in films or TV that, you know, and their representation of the culture, right? Mm-hmm. Did I get it? Is there anything you want to add? Because it's kind of a bad description, I'd say.
No, it's okay. So I just talk about representation in film, positive and negative. And really, I think the difference is I wanted like a constant stream of review of movies because they come out all the time, obviously. And there's a long history of Natives in film. But I felt like there was a lot of light shed on just the big hitters, you know, Dances with Wolves and Pocahontas. You would see a lot of articles and YouTube, you know, BuzzFeed would jump on it. Different film critics might jump on an article, talk about like the Indian burial grounds trope, maybe once during Halloween. But there wasn't really like a consistent stream of reviews and talking about movies. And there's movies all the time that aren't on the nose Native. But movies like Back to the Future 3, Parasite, Fargo, I mean, these have Native Americans in them. They have Native imagery in them. But nobody really talks about those movies. And that's kind of what got me going when I saw Parasite. If you've seen that, you know there's Native representation in there. And I rewatched one of my favorite documentaries, Real Engine. It's by a Cree director named Neil Diamond. And it just talks about like the history of Native film representation. And I was just like, man, it would be so cool if someone did a podcast like that. So I went looking. His phenomenon was how he thought he was like a lame Indian because he was, you know, born in Canada, but he was bummed that he didn't ride horses. His family didn't have war bonnets. They didn't shoot bow and arrow. And I was like, bro, me too. Like, I was so disappointed. Like, Navajos are so lame, you know, because that was growing up, you see that stuff on TV. You're like, we don't have war paint. We don't have war bonnets. But as a kid, that's your worldview, you know, like that's representation to you. You like, even though you are Navajo and you are Native, like you don't register that in that same way when on television, that's all you see in movies. That's all you see. So I wanted to bring that perspective too of just looking back at those movies that I have seen a long time ago. What's my perspective now and how has that changed? Like Indian in the Cupboard and Pocahontas were two big ones I talked about that I saw as a kid and then rewatched as an adult. And
I've never thought about things like that. You were talking about how your perception as a child, even though you grew up on the reservation, was very much formed by these external things like like movies and TV shows that represented people that were like us or supposed to be like us, right? And man, that's crazy because I had some of the same thoughts growing up, you know. I'm like, what the hell? I don't know how to do any of this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I don't have any tomahawks and crazy cool stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, so but that's like the cool part of being a native on television and movies is like the tomahawks, the bow and arrows, the living in a teepee. You know, unless you were in NAC, we never saw teepees around where we live in the Southwest, you know. Uh-huh. And so that's like the closest I ever got to it. And my family didn't practice it. So I never stepped foot in a teepee in my life. But and then so I played golf, too, growing up. And I mentioned that in Tuba City, there's no golf courses. At Northern Arizona, there's nothing. So I would come down to the valley to Phoenix for tournaments. And it's a kind of it's like a middle upper class kind of sport in general. So it's kind of odd that I was playing. And so consequently, when I would play these tournaments, it would be primarily, non-minority people. It'd be primarily white. And I was the only Native person that they ever met, typically.
Oh, my God.
Or that they've, so we get some pretty ignorant questions. I would anyway, like, what's your Indian name? Do you still live in a teepee? Just stuff like that. And
how old were you when that was happening?
Oh, I was probably 10 to 14 when I was like, 11 to 14, 15 when I was playing that competitively. And we got those questions a lot.
I'm not trying to be insensitive, but man, some people are just really obtuse, huh?
Yeah. No, it's not insensitive. You're calling it for what it is. It's pretty wild. But that would make me question things. Like when I would go home, I would ask my mom, like, what's my Indian name? She's like, your name is Ian. You have an Indian name, you know? And like, she would just try to, but I would feel embarrassed, you know, like with my family and my friends. And I was scared to tell my friends, like, you had to confide, like all my friends are Navajo and Hopi. Uh-huh. And so I was like scared to tell them, like, bro, what's your Indian name? Or do you have an Indian name? Like, do you have, cause I didn't want to be the one of like, you didn't get one of those, you know, like kind of thing you missed out. I'm like, yeah, it's Ian. Like,
how do you not know, you know?
Yeah, it's like, Ian, how did you not know you have an Indian name? You know, like, everybody got one of those. You didn't get one. So I was like really had this crisis almost from just these seemingly throwaway interactions. You're just walking around on the golf course, you know, because all these tournaments that you play in as a kid, there's just like your paired in foursomes. You go along the golf course and, you know, you're there for 4 or 5 hours. What else are you going to do except talk to the people you're playing with, learn where they're from, learn what their hobbies are? And me being Navajo always came up because I'm from Tuba City, and they're like, Tuba City, I've never heard of that. And then, yeah, it's on the Navajo reservation. And then the conversation would begin. And then the questions would, you know, would ensue. And looking back, I wish I had a better memory of those conversations to remember some of the constant questions I would get. But like the two ones that always stuck out to me are just like, what Indian name? And then, do you still live in a teepee?
I don't get it, man. I really don't. Like, when I think about someone from the outside looking in, I guess I get it, because what you're talking about is representation represents people that way, right? Mm-hmm. That's the idea that's painted in people's heads. But I just, it's so, oh man, just stupid.
You know? Yeah. Well, looking at it now, I can see that how else were they supposed to know? I mean, we can look at it and kind of wag our finger at them and say, like, how could you? But at the same time, like, they're just children too, just like I was. Like, they are a victim of their teachers and a lack of knowledge given to them. And so
I hadn't thought of that. Like, they were 10 at the time too. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. It's not like it was full grown adults coming to me and telling me this. Yeah. They were, you know, they were 11, 12 years old too. And these were genuine questions. It wasn't in jest. It wasn't like to make fun of me. They were genuinely curious, like, oh, do you have an Indian name? I think that it affected me too. In my Indian in the Cupboard episode, that's if you've seen that movie, it's of a little bear who's supposed to be Onondaga. And in that movie, it has the vanishing Indian trope that, like, they're gone and they never, because it's through the lens of a child, there's no course correction about, like, and here's what the Onondaga do today. And here's where the Onondaga reside now. Here's what their population looks like. It leaves with a very, like, depressing tone of, like, they're gone. And so I'd never met an Onondaga person until I was in college. And I was just like, oh my God, you're real. This is crazy. You know, like, and I'm native from Southwest, spent my entire life here. But when I went to school back East, I met people that were Mohawk, Tuscarora, Onondaga. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, it blew my mind. But that's like how my mindset was framed.
Yeah, no, I grew up here in White River on the reservation. I'm sure you know where it's at. Mm-hmm. And the first time that I met natives that weren't Hopi, Navajo, or Apache was when I went to college. And nice. I didn't realize that, well, at least to the best of my knowledge, you know, because mm-hmm. I just assumed everyone Same. That was here was Apache, Navajo, or Hopi because of where we're at. Right. But
where did you go to school?
When sorry. I Alchase on okay. the reservation.
Yeah, no, a college. Alchase. College, sorry.
Oh, NAU.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, I went in Flagstaff.
Yeah, but, that's a like melting pot for like it's like you get so many different natives from all over the place. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that mm-hmm. makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, but I was like, it blew my mind when I started to because I've talked about this before on the show, but I grew up kind of like disconnected from the native identity because of I'm light skinned and stuff, and people were mm-hmm. mean to me about it growing up, even on the reservation. So you know, it was kind of hard for me to find my spot. Mm-hmm. on the reservation, but going out there and like seeing just how expansive Native America is and stuff, you know, it's pretty wild. I didn't realize there's that many tribes and that many peoples still kicking around because like you said, everything that we're shown on TV is that there aren't Native people left, you know? So I mm-hmm. kind of thought that I was a phenomena, you know, that I was like a rare thing, but I don't know.
Cause you were Native and light-skinned.
Yeah, no, not that, because we were native. I thought rare to just be native, right? Yeah, which I mean, sure, it is in comparison to other things, but it's a lot more common than I had previously thought is what I was trying to say.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think that's something that I always thought too, is like Navajos only live on the res just growing up. Like mm-hmm. I would see people, the only places I would see Navajos were like the border towns. So like when I go to Phoenix, I'll randomly see someone in a mall. And you know what they look like, you know, you just spot them out. Like, hey, that's Navajo. Well, that's Hopi. Or that's a, you just kind of like, after a while, you just have an eye for it because you grew up around them. And mm-hmm. Flagstaff, same thing. Like you see them all over the place. So when I met Navajos, like randomly in the city or you run into them in other places, you're just like, holy crap, we're everywhere. It's pretty crazy. But as an adult, mm-hmm. you learn that, you know, like no one tells you that when you're on the res. Of like, hey, mm-hmm. you're in Tuba City now, but there's Navajos all over the country, all over the world. And there's other natives all over the world too, that you should, you know, be aware of. And I bet my little kid brain would have said like, oh, wow. Like, so like Onondaga people and Mohawk people too. And it would be like, yeah, they live here currently. And I don't know. It helps that we have the internet now to where if my son has questions like that, it's not I think it's in this area. We could look it up online of like, here's where the Akwesasne Rez is today. You know, here's where the Mi'kmaq mm-hmm. people reside now. And I think that access into information hopefully will help drive the conversation in a more positive direction moving forward.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot what this show is about too, is representation and making sure that, because we have an 11-year-old right now, and it's making sure that he has access to people like you or any of my guests that are from various places, but identify as Native American and are doing things that are positive in their communities or positive in their own lives. And, you know, there's a whole huge cast of people that do things from like silversmithing all the way to, you know, film podcasts. And it's like I said, it's so that he doesn't have to struggle with these identity crises like I had to, or like you had to. So he has access to these things when he's ready to listen to these things. Or
man, we're like doing almost the same purpose for all of our shows. So mine also, I always close with, will I show this to my son? That's like kind of that's my like measure for a film. And it's truly, I have him in mind when I'm doing this of just thinking about movies. And, you know, I was watching television sounds really old. I was watching TV. I was watching TV the other day and Molly from Denali came on the PBS show. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I've heard of it. I haven't seen any yet though. We don't have TV and I just haven't like sought it out yet.
No, it's okay. It's if you ever get a chance, just watch one episode. I think they have like, it's available for purchase on Amazon Prime. But man, like you see that and you just feel good about like, man, there's positive stuff going on. Like to see a show, like it's really like a res show. It's like if a res produced something for their own kids and they just mass produced it. Like that's what Molly from Denali feels like. It's so wholesome. They speak their language in there. They talk about the oral stories to teach life lessons. And there's not only just Native kids in there, you know, there's like African American kids. There's a lot of representation in there, and it just shows kids like what the real world's really like for someone in Alaska. And it's, it made me feel really good to see that. And so I tried to keep that as a constant reminder, like, will I show this to my son? You know, Indian in the Cupboard, I'm going to keep him away from that. But then there's awesome movies you grew up with, like Last of the Mohicans, where there's some things that you can course correct on, but it's just like, man, when I was a kid, this was amazing and you should see it too, you know, kind of thing. Like Magua was, you know, the king, and still, so you need to watch this kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, my friends and I, like, we used to get hype watching Last of the Mohicans. That last fight when he rolls under the swing, oh man, it's so sick, you know? And yeah, so I totally feel that.
At that point, you know, in the movie, you're not even disappointed that the fight was over quick, because like Russell Means like ducks under Magua and just like, whoa, you know, takes his war club to his side. That's so freaking, yeah, it was awesome. Yeah,
it was awesome. It was a very 10 out of 10 moment. No, but yeah, so I just want to talk a little bit more about this, will you show it to your son kind of thing, because what's the criteria for that? Because that's a very interesting meter. It's very unique.
Yeah, so I think obviously it's subjective, and I'm the one that gauges it. So, but I think that
it's your show.
I think it's centered around the responsibility and intent taken to the show, and also how it aged. Like Indian in the Cupboard at the time was viewed as progress because of how much research they put into it, but it just doesn't age well because of it perpetuates like a vanishing Indian, you know, noble savage trope, but that we're not very intelligent, that we're not advanced people, and we were incapable of like utilizing technology. So I think that something like that, there's just too much to for his mind to process in the wrong way, that I'm just like, you know what, he can watch that later, but I'm not going to recommend it to him. You know, and like I think something like Last of the Mohicans, where there's some things that are somewhat problematic, but overall, like that's just a win, you know. Smoke Signals is just a win. So I'll gladly recommend those to him. And Blood Quantum, which I did recently too, that's another step in the right direction. I will gladly recommend that he watch that movie. Age appropriate, obviously. I'm not going to show it to him.
Say, how old is your son?
So he's about 1.5 now. So he's pretty darn young.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. He's a little one still. Yeah. So that was going to be my next question. You know, when he becomes a teenager, with some of these scores maybe change, you know, depending on the conversation you wanted to have with him about that. Cause I'm just trying to work it out. I like the system though. I like it a lot. Cause that's kind of how I gauge the guest on here too. Do I want Jesse to hear about these guests?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. I think also it's just like the impact on your life as a father, as when you were growing up as a kid, things that framed your mindset, like Wind Talkers is a movie about the code talkers, and that movie is, for me personally, it didn't age well. It just didn't. It's messy, it's busy. I think it was an opportunity for the director to just make a war movie.
Adam Beach movie?
Yeah, Adam Beach and Nick Cage. And at the time, you know, it's an okay movie. It's not that great, but I would show it to him because I'm like, man, Navajo's dominated Flagstaff for like 2 straight weeks because we all flocked to go to Harkins when this came out. And we just like loved this movie and ate it up, you know. And like my dad talks about the old Planet of the Apes movies like that, and how like they ran Gallup, like they would just go to Gallup at the theater there, and just every single showing was just jam packed full of Navajos. And you know, the Planet of the Apes movies are like, you know, I mean, they aged somewhat differently, the whole anthology, I guess, but. Like, I think I would like my son to hear stories like that of just like, man, you should have heard at this part in the movie when he says his clans, like the Navajos, it was like an Avenger movie where they all went, crazy and cheering and clapping. And I'm like, that's the first time I ever heard like Native people excited in a theater, butts in the seats, like sitting next to each other, all facing the same direction. Just like, holy crap, we're on the big screen, you know? And
yeah, someone so made it. So we all made it, you know?
100%. 100%. And I think those like pivotal moments, even though that, you know, the movie, I'm like, whatever, I'll certainly tell them about it. But I think also there's movies coming out I mean, there's stuff out now like Molly from Denali and kids movies even coming up, like Spirit Rangers coming out on Netflix soon. So there's like, there's, I think that these movies I'm reviewing now, I would like to think that they're going to be a step behind the movies that are going to be out when he's growing up. That's my hope anyway. Yeah. And that we can tell real stories. Like, I would love for a native director, a native writer to talk about the skin color dynamics in Indian country, like the blood quantum and how that affects our, the, you know, us being discriminatory toward each other. I think there's like a great TV show there in that, like there's so much to unpack there. And it's, you know, with people who are mixed with white, who are on the reservation and light skinned, you know, there's just so much like cultural dynamic there that's just unseen and unheard of. But as Indian country, like you were saying, that's like, that's who, that framed who you are, that framed your identity, that probably framed your personality because you were picked on growing up because of your skin color. And it's probably framed where you went to school, probably framed how you performed in school. And I think those are great conversations to have. And that's the kind of movie that I'm hoping gets made, or television or representation, whether it's in book form or in media. I hope that those kinds of stories get told eventually.
You said that it can frame people, and it can, you know, it's this divisive thing in Native America. What, I mean, I'm a victim of it, very much so. Mm-hmm. But being a victim of it, I've looked at it every way that I can, and I don't know how to fix a system like Blood Quantum, you know?
Yeah, it's difficult. So in my my Blood Quantum episode, I talked about like the bogusness of DNA tests and how I wish, like in the universe of Blood Quantum, where your indigenous blood is the vaccine and not the cure, it's your immunity, and how that should have been explored more, of how by virtue of having native blood, you are immune to the virus. So you could throw all of the 23andMe people that try to say like, oh, I'm X amount of native, how do I get enrolled? Those annoying questions that we get. And also the blood quantum system, where you are in some regards, in some instances, prevented from being an enrolled member in your community because you don't meet the minimum requirements. Mm-hmm. I feel like there was a great opportunity for that to be explored, where we just throw that against the wall and we're like, say, hey man, like if you are native, you want, you live the experience, you know the plight of us, like you're connected to the culture, you want to be connected to the culture, you have ancestors, you have relatives that are from the res, like, or from the native nation, and you know, we accept you. I think it's a very colonial, it's imposed by a colonial government to say, let's put this measuring stick in place so they can fight amongst each other. And I think sometimes we get so caught up in the how much native are you, that we end up accomplishing what they sought out to do, is we pit ourselves against each other. And it's so unfortunate. And gosh, I mean, to just think in any other way, like how would you validate your self-worth using a piece of paper or a card? Like, just sounds gross, you know, at face value.
Well, I mean, it's definitely barbaric, to say the least. But no, I'm a victim of it. I've grown up on the reservation. I moved here from Holbrook. I grew up in Holbrook because that's where my dad's from, till 3 years old, about two or three. And I moved to Honda home sites and on the reservation. And like my first school that I ever went to was a Head Start on the reservation. And I went all the way until I was 18. Right. So I very much identify with like being native, being Apache, you know, this is my home, this is my community, these are the people that I'm going to serve if I can serve them as long as I can, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but what you're talking about is like, I don't meet the blood quantum, right? It's a quarter White Mountain Apache. And the way it cuts is I'm an eighth White Mountain and an eighth San Carlos. So I don't quite hit that blood quantum. You know, I'm a quarter Apache all around.
Right.
But because of the distinction between the two, which the distinction exists for a reason, I understand that. But it just, you know, it hurts me a ton.
And so I wish we would look at blood quantum in the same way we look at DNA test results. So just like, just BS, you know, and just look at it of like, it's not, you shouldn't be using something that's printed on a piece of paper to validate your identity. And that is, I think, so unfortunate that we still do that. When in fact, so my university, my colleges don't even do that. You can check the box and they just let you in. But yeah. our own communities are like, hold on, where's our piece of paper? So I grew up playing sports. Mm-hmm. Sports, Native American sports tournaments are more, have stronger gatekeepers than institutions of higher learning, because you have to sign, when you sign up and you're like, hey, our roster is all Native American, you have to produce CIBs, you have to produce cards mm-hmm. that validate it. And the parents, they'll get mad, especially if someone's really good, you know, like, that kid doesn't look Native, he shouldn't be playing, or she doesn't look Native, you know, I've never seen her before. Like, it's so gross, but we don't do that at all in college. The college just let everybody in, you check the box, go right ahead. And it definitely is a broken system. But outside of Indian country, outside of people like you that have experienced that, it's so hard to tell people what that's like. And mm-hmm. imagine if I didn't know what you were talking about, or I shouldn't say imagine, you have it all the time where you have to explain that to people. Like, you can't even explain your plight.
I just don't even tell people anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like the first time I've talked about it in months, because people from here don't care because they're tribal members and it doesn't affect them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that as like a slight against them. There's a lot of good people from here. And people from outside the res just don't care because it's not their res, it's not their problem, you know?
Can you imagine? I mean, that in itself, so that was like, you are the person I would center my, I had a portion of the Blood Quantum episode of like my fan fiction of like, you are the exact situation that I painted of, I don't know if we can swear on this, so I won't say exactly what I'll say, but
we
can. Yeah, so I envisioned a situation where you are exactly the situation where you have parents who are fractions by paper, by law, and then mm-hmm. you go to apply for enrollment, and then they stamp you with the disapproval saying you are not Native enough. And then the zombie outbreak happens, and then there's a moment where like the entire enrollment office gets like flooded with zombies. Everybody gets bit, and it's like, who's Native enough now, bitch? You know, I didn't turn. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to see that, of just like turning it on its head. It's just like, these papers don't mean anything. These like numbers and fractions we put on people, like, it's so disgusting to see like our Native brothers and sisters, like, just tearing each other apart. Cause you're living on the res right now.
Yeah.
You are raising Native children, and by some BS fraction, you're not Native by definition, by the government's, you know, definition that they allowed us to manage our own systems. And gosh, that's gross. I'm sorry to hear that. I don't feel your pain, but I recognize what it truly is. And it's just a messed up system, because like, even within your own people, you don't feel embraced. I'm assuming, you know, that's just crap.
Well, I mean, I don't get like Native preference and things like that on my jobs, even here on the res.
Jeez.
Yeah. So like, you know, I'm battling with everybody for the jobs if I'm applying and stuff. And so that's like the only thing that I've noticed that kind of sucks. But other than that, like, the people here, I mean, they know my last name, you know, I say Enfield and everyone's like, oh man, that's you know, that's Laurel's kid. It's Raymond's grandson. They know like the family. So there's a lot of respect for that. But, and I don't think a lot of people know that my situation with being not tribal member, I think they just, I'm just light skinned to them, and they assume I'm a tribal member, because my mom's real light skinned too, and she's a tribal member.
Well, and so, see how you are embraced in your community is how it should be. It's like, they don't ever say like, hey, where's your card? You can't walk in here. They're just like, oh yeah, that's so-and-so's kid, or that's so-and-so's grandson. When the truth is, that's how it is for everyone. Just because, you know, my CIB says 4/4, that doesn't mean that anybody has ever asked for it in my life. They say like, oh, your grandma is this person. Mm-hmm. Your grandpa is this person. Your family's from Cedar Ridge. Your family's from Copper Mine. That's how they, that's how they say where you're from, you know, like where your grandparents come from. And that's all that really should matter, is identifying through your lineage, like your known lineage. You know, none of this like, my great great grandma was a Cherokee princess. Like, I'm talking like, my grandpa lived here and he's from this nation. And
it's a very interesting topic, very controversial. I know we're probably both gonna, you know, be thinking twice about all of this after we're done.
Oh, for sure. It's problematic too, because there really doesn't seem to be a fix in sight. There's no real activism around this to like make a solution, at least that I'm aware of. But it's something certainly that you know, with my son, I'm going to try to educate him, because I, at some point we're growing his hair out, and that we want him to, you know, grow his hair out until he makes a decision of whether or not he wants it. But, I had major concerns, even just that. I mean, you talk about discrimination. This is probably more non-native discrimination, but he'll get profiled immediately, you know, by virtue of being a boy with braids. You know, they're like, oh, he's Native American. I have Native American friends who got that label of just like, it was obvious that he was Native, because one, he fit the, you know, ethnically ambiguous kind of role, but then they saw the braids and like, oh, he's Native. And I'm worried what that's going to look like for him. But at the same time, we're just, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you gotta break some eggs, but also I really feel like we're, yeah. Well, I really do mean that too. Like, you got to make some mistakes, even as a parent, man, you know,
I've never heard it said that way, but once you said it, I'm like, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, dude, you gotta, you know, you're, gotta mess your kid up a little bit. You can't raise a fully adjusted kid, you know?
100%. Come on.
But, no, the, shoot, where was I going with that? I don't remember.
It's okay.
But yeah, but that's cool. No, I'm glad that you're growing out his hair and letting him make his own choices and stuff. My mom grew my hair out until I was in sixth grade. You know, that was really wild because I got made fun of for it a lot.
Well, that's the other thing too, is like, you're talking about the discrimination part. Like, we had a few Native guy, Navajo guys in our class that, and they were the only one, you know, that had their hair grown out. It's not like it was normal. And yeah, they got picked on. It's, you know, I mean, and kids are mean too. So it's never good.
Yeah, dude, there was like slurs, you know, when you were a kid, they were hateful. They were mean. Yeah. But anyway, man, let's kind of, talk about you a little bit more, because this is what we came to talk about, was you, and we got sidetracked.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's okay. I listened to your episodes. The sidetracks, the tangents are some of the best parts.
So. Yeah, that's just not a topic that I ever get to talk about, because like I said, it's, you know, it's very nuanced and it's very touchy, and there's not a lot of people who are willing to sit here and talk about it, I feel like, unless it's what they're doing actually.
Right.
So, but anyway, so your show, do you call them reviews, or are they just, they're not reviews, right?
They're both. Like, you can just call them reviews. That's where it fits under in the podcast world. It's a review.
Yeah. I don't know where mine fits. I put it in personal journals, and I'm pretty sure if Apple looked at it, they would tell me I'm wrong and, you know, unlist me. But
under Apple, mine is film reviews. So that's where I put it.
Okay. Yeah. No, you do these reviews, these analyses, and so what has been your general consensus of like the movies you've done so far? Has there been historically in the Hollywood universe, generally positive reinforcement for natives or positive imagery for natives?
I would say there's always instances of progress at the major motion picture level, but it's never enough. I think the only one where they kind of got it right was Smoke Signals. That was like the first major motion picture that was written, directed, and co-produced by natives. And then pretty much exclusively acted in too. And that was in 98. And so in 22 years later, we're still trying to look for the next Smoke Signals. You know, there really hasn't been, there are some instances where, there are natives behind the camera, you know, while it's not a Native American, you know, an indigenous person, Taika Waititi, he's gotten behind the camera. So I try to look at those just as a whole, like there's some wins out there. But as far as like another Chris Ayer coming along and like directing major motion pictures, we're still kind of not quite there yet. But at the Sundance level, you know, in the indie film level, there's a lot of Native storytellers, the short story level. Like there's a ton of those stories that just aren't making it to that next level where it's like seen by non-Native people or non-art house people who are in that realm. So movies like Blood Quantum, it's kind of that lower level, lower tier zombie movie. It really is like a B-level zombie movie, but man, it's a heck of a movie. That's my like reset the bar kind of movie, of just like written, directed, led, showrunner, everything by Native people.
So tell me a little bit more about that. What do you mean, like, it set the bar? Does, like, the quality of the film, or just the staff, or, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts in a movie.
Yeah. So I mean, just the, in the way that it doesn't acknowledge that it's a native movie, they're just native people existing in the world. And that rarely is told. It's usually period pieces where it's very apparent that, like, hey, these were native people at that time. Or it has to be explained, or the world has to be explained to this native person because they're not of this world, or they're from a different world, from the reservation or from poverty, or they're separate from this world because they are in poverty, like in Wind River. I don't know if you've seen that one. Wind River is a Jeremy Renner, Elizabeth Olsen film directed by Taylor Sheridan. It's a MMIW story, is kind of what it boils down to. But in that movie, it while it has great representation in terms of, like, the cast members that are playing native people, the story is written by a non-native person. And so some of it is sensationalized, and it very much shows just the grim parts of the res, like drug addiction, poverty, and really just focuses on that. But that's where Smoke Signals didn't do that. Just like, yeah, we live below the poverty line for the most part on reservations, but we don't know that. You know, like, that's not something that we wave in front of everybody. Like, when we're just walking around, like, 7-Eleven doesn't look like a rundown gas station. That's where we get food from. Like, those are the stories that I want to see. And Blood Quantum did that, where it's just like, it turns everything on its head, and the native cast is, like, excellent. And it's just natives occupying a world where they are the only one, really. So it's, nothing is explained. It just feels like you're just watching people hang out on a res for the most part. Hang out. I mean, they're fighting zombies, but yeah. I mean, like, nobody's sensationalized like in Indian in the Cupboard, or, you know, I would say, so yeah.
This phenomenon of sensationalizing, what does that mean? Like, they're not actively pointing out that they're native and things like that, or
whether that's in the mannerisms or their fish out of water mentality of just, because that's usually some of the tropes that they do, is when they're off the reservation, they're off to the side of just like, oh, I've never seen television before, or like, oh, why are these people dancing in you know, why are these people out dancing, or what's all these vehicles? You know, what's this city traffic? There's always that fish out of water thing of just like, even though they're set in modern times, they're very separated from the modern world, or it's in the language that they use where it's very like, it's like the token native, where it's very much like they have a certain cadence that they match that's different from everybody in the movie, or it's in their wardrobe. You know, like, they've just purposely put Pendleton on them, even though it's modern times, they put a Pendleton jacket on them because that's what they look like. Or they'll cast somebody that has long hair and they'll just braid it and then make it painfully obvious that this person's native. Or if it's a period piece, they'll use stereotypical costumes, the leather and feathers, as it's referred to at times, where then that's where it gets problematic. Because then it's then an interpretation of what you think they look like back then. And there really hasn't been a whole lot of checks and balances with accuracy in history until recently, I would say. But, and like, people like Wes Studi would bring a lot of light to that because he would advocate for accuracy. Russell Means advocated for accuracy in Last of the Mohicans. But then there's other instances where it's just kind of like, yeah, just throw a war bonnet on him. You know, but I'm Navajo, you know, you're playing a Cherokee in this one. It's like, what, Cherokees don't wait? No, just get on the horse, you know? And then they would just draw and just say, all right, shoot it, go, take the action, pretty much. So you've graduated a lot in certain areas, but I think right now the issue is native people not getting cast in native roles too. I think that's the other problem.
And see, that's something that I'm super ignorant in the world of movies because I'm just not a big movie fan. I don't know. I just think they're kind of boring personally.
No,
I know that sounds weird to some people.
No, it's okay.
why does that happen? Why is there this disconnect between like putting the right person in the right job? Like if you're shooting a film with a Navajo dude, shouldn't you just go to Navajo Nation, you know? figured out?
Yeah, well, so when there's casting calls, like that's kind of how their job boards are. And so when they go to these casting calls, there is no, hey, let me see your, much like colleges where it's like, hey, let me see your CIB. So somebody could say like, hey, yeah, I'm Native American, and be ethnically ambiguous. And that's usually how it goes. Unfortunately, in Hollywood, you probably wouldn't get cast as a native simply just because of your appearance, you know, and and I wouldn't probably either because I don't look, apparently I don't have braids. I don't have like features. I'm brown, but I think that I would be just a brown person, you know? And I think that there's other individuals who are, the term that's used in the industry, ethnically ambiguous, that can be used for, you know, playing a Mexican person in one movie and then while turning around and playing an Indian man in another, like a person from India. And then in another movie, they could play Native American just simply because they have a ethnically ambiguous facial features and skin tone. And so there are a lot of roles that are taken by individuals who are ethnically ambiguous. Example, in Wind River, the main woman who is centered around the, I guess like the who is the focus of the plot, the missing murdered indigenous woman. She, her name is Kelsey Chow. She is of Chinese American descent. And prior to that movie, claimed Cherokee ancestry and got cast for that, you know, which is arguably one of the most important roles in the movie. She was, the other roles were all actual Native American actors that are prominent figures. And she was cast as a Native American in the movie. And after that, she just changed her name to like Kelsey Aspill or something, dropped her Chow last name and claims Cherokee heritage and still gets work and is on Yellowstone right now, that television show by Kevin Costner, as a Native American person.
And she's not Native?
No. Well, so this is where the blood quantum thing, you know, gets a little messy of how do you then define the minimum? You know, it's like she claimed heritage and claims that these roles connect her closer to her heritage. And then the Cherokee Enrollment Office basically came out at one point with a statement said, like, we have no record of her or her lineage being members of the nation. And so at that point, I really don't know where that falls upon of like, can you just call her a liar and not cast her in these roles anymore? Or is it, but because she does have a long like filmography, so she is an established actor, so she can get work and continues to get work, but there's instances like that too where even it gets more down to the tribal level. Like when Wind Talkers came out, there was a lot of flack that Adam Beach got because he wasn't Navajo, you know, he's Anishinaabe, so wasn't a Navajo person. So I think it's a little complicated, it's a little messy. I don't think you can please everybody, but I think casting natives in native roles is a strong start.
Yeah, and absolutely. And
I think more importantly is allowing us to tell our stories. Like there are movies like, just trying to think off the top of my head. Well, you have to get back to me on that one.
It's tough, man. I feel it when you're on the mic and you feel like you can talk for hours and then just save way, you know?
Yeah.
Just leaves you. Yeah, I feel it. So, what qualifies you to do a native podcast, a native film podcast? I mean,
yeah, no, that's good. Like,
did you go to school for film or something like that? Or
no. So I went to, I did my undergrad at Dartmouth College and I was a Native American Studies major. And, so I was a Native American Studies, and environmental science double major over there. And in my NAS major, I did my first Native American Studies class ever was Native Americans in Film. And when I took that class that freshman fall, and that was my third class got dropped and my advisor was like, you need to fill an extra class. Your class didn't have enough people. And I'm just like, what? Because you had like your freshman classes and then an elective you just chose. And the one I chose, the professor dropped it. And so last minute, I went and took that class with some upperclassmen. It was like an upperclassman class in the NAS department, and changed my life, changed my world. You know, the first movie we saw was Pocahontas, and we went and looked at it from this professor, Mishana Goman, went and presented us things of like, here's the tropes that are constantly explored, the carnivalesque, the gaze of And then like the noble savage and the drunken Indian. And we talked about basically how film has framed people's mindsets and representation, how important it is in the films, and how we don't really have advocates at times, you know, but we have to recognize how our mindsets are being framed and how these film techniques continue to be used in different ways that aren't on the nose, like The Searchers, where we are just, you know, attacking and raping people. That's like the murderers. That's the vision that's given to the audience. So I went and did that, graduated, and then I just held on to that. Like, that was like my through line in college. Every opportunity I got in my Native American Studies classes, I would be like, oh, try to wrangle in a film, try to wrangle in something, a film, a documentary, or a television show, a TV spot, something. I was just addicted to media after that. And, yeah. So I just kind of kept up the love. I was just a film lover. I mean, just love watching movies. And I saw A Void and I was just like, there's got to be somebody better to do this, but I'll just do it, you know? And I'm no stranger to researching and spending the time to look into it. So I felt like, hey, I'll do this. You know, I got time. COVID, you know, I'm just stuck at home.
That's right, baby. Love it. But, so... Man, I'm losing my train of thought a lot.
No, you're okay.
I'm lost in like what you're talking about, man.
I'm
thinking a lot about what you're saying because it's so similar to a lot of my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of our ideas are the same. Oh, here's what it was. So you went out to Dartmouth from Navajo Nation, right?
Yep.
You were in Tuba City.
Yep.
What was that like? What was that contrast like for you?
Because
important to like.
So that was like my golf course story I was telling you, but like expanded to a college campus, and it's because that's the same kind of students that are there. I mean, you do have individuals who have like really humble beginnings. One thing I wanted to add with the film,
please
the film thing. And so my younger brother went to the University of Rochester, and he is a film major, and so we always grew up like loving film, and so he's kind of like my what's the word. He's like my subject matter expert that I go to whenever I have like some serious questions. So it's not just me in a vacuum. You know, my wife like started my social media, you know, created the website, and it's not just all me doing stuff. So I just watch the movies and do the research. And then I have a lot of people that I refer to and have questions. I reach out to them. But going to Dartmouth, man, that was where the what's your Indian name was like really a big thing of just, and that's really? where the discrimination too was at on another level, because the Dartmouth mascot used to be the Dartmouth Indian, and I think around the 80s it was changed, because the reason why I chose Dartmouth is because it was founded for Native education, oddly enough, and it's older than this country. It was founded in 1769, and it was founded initially for Native education, and then eventually became, you know, revered as a world renowned Ivy League school, whatever. And then the president at the time, President Wright, who was there when I was there, wanted to go back to that mission of Native education. And so it was really big on recruiting Native Americans. So it has the biggest and still does a population of Native American students out of all the Ivy Leagues combined. So you can combine all the other Ivy Leagues, and that doesn't even come close to Dartmouth's enrollment. That's why I wanted to go, because if you're going to be homesick somewhere, be homesick with a community of Native people. That's kind of how I felt. But when I was at Dartmouth, so that I leaned on them a lot. The reason why I bring that up is when we had these, we had a big Indian Native mascot issue, because there are a lot of legacy people that go to these Ivy League institutions. Like, you know, my dad went, my grandpa went, his great grandpa went. And so even though the mascot wasn't officially the mascot anymore, with a Dartmouth green, there are people who have their dad's Letterman jacket or windbreaker that has the Indian head on the back, or they have like these old oak carved maple, you know, really expensive looking staffs that have an Indian head carved on them. You know, and they have certain things, you know, there's like always like the rumor about like Bones Gate at Yale, where they have like so-and-so's bones, like that kind of crap still is actually out there on, you know, in the Ivy League institutions. And so when we have like homecoming games, these people would make their own shirts and bring back the Native American, like the mascot, and they would, yeah, they would just do stuff like that and make shirts, like one big shirt. I can't remember exactly what it was. They made a shirt that we were playing Holy Cross for our homecoming game, and they made a shirt of like the most stereotypical Native like image you can imagine, standing up, like getting a blowjob from the Holy Cross mascot. And they were selling that right in front of the dining hall.
God.
Right in front of the dining hall. And it was, and they were selling out like hotcakes, man. People were buying things up left and right. And so we made a big deal out of it. And as a Native community.
Who was selling that?
It was the Dartmouth Review. I think they were affiliated with the Dartmouth Review. So it was like one of the new campus newspapers. And we made a big stink about it. And naturally, and ended up shutting them down to stop selling those t-shirts. And then, gosh, this is years ago. I'm trying to remember all this, so apologize if it's spotty.
No worries.
But it got to the point where it was just starting a conversation about like solidarity, and starting a conversation about like, hey, we should all band together. We should all come together around a common cause and point out things like this for what it is. Like, it's crap. It's BS. Like, these, like, we're not voiceless. We have allies. And so CNN came on campus, and there was a handful of like other news outlets that came on campus to shed light on just different solidarity issues that were going on at Dartmouth. One of those being the Native mascot and how individuals refuse to move on from, you know, using that. And it still happens, you know, every homecoming, because that's when the alumni come on, you know, and they bring their stuff. They come and show up, you know, the Dartmouth Indian. And that's when I started seeing the big whoop kind of mentality of just like, oh, we're honoring you. We're not disrespecting you by having it. But it's problematic for me because I grew up in Tuba City. My mascot's a stereotypical looking warrior, you know, like, but it's okay for us all for some reason. So, but because of that, when I went there, having never been exposed to that Native mascot issue, I'm just like, what's the big deal? I initially thought that. You know, because I'm like, well, I grew up in a high school where we were the Warriors. The Dartmouth Indian looks exactly like my high school mascot. What's the big deal? But then you hear your friends who had the same problem but didn't go to a conference where it was all Native schools. Maybe they were the only Native school and they were the Indians, or they were the Warriors and they were in an all-white district. And so when they would travel to other towns and they would play non-Native schools, they would get crapped on and they would get called crazy names and be degraded simply because of and they were allowed to because it was under the veil of sports and sports fandom. And you see that, and they're like, that's what gets perpetuated by this crap in the hands of non-Native people, because they view it as like almost like tribalism, like an opportunity to exercise like some kind of just, I don't know. And it really dehumanizes you too. Because they're like, that's not you. What's on that picture? That's not you. That's something different. And I'm like, bro, like you are, it's called the Dartmouth Indian. Like, what do you mean? That's not us. You know, we're honoring you.
Yeah.
How's that different from a pirate? You know, should I be offended? I'm sure I have ancestors that were pirates. You know, we would hear that crap all the time. And you get in like screaming matches with people trying to get them to understand. But that's where I started getting.
Say that about pirates?
Oh yeah. there are some people that were like, what about a buccaneer? What about a pirate? What about the Irishman? You know, shouldn't I be offended by that? I'm not offended by that. Why are you offended by, you know, the Indian, by the Seminoles, by the Blackhawks, by the Redskins? It was really just an opportunity to not listen, like trying to find a leg for them to stand on, to say like, no, your argument is invalid because it doesn't affect my life. And that's when I started getting a glimpse into that. And I'm just like, representation is much bigger than just movies and television. But it's a huge part of it is movies and television. So, no,
and it makes sense that you kind of weren't aware of that, because I mean, no matter what a lot of people say, and it's less and less like this every year, but existing on the reservation is very much existing in a vacuum.
100%.
If you live on the reservation and you don't really travel. Yeah, exactly. Pre-internet for sure, dude. I didn't have internet till I was 17. You know,
like I had DSL. I had DSL when I was like 15, but so really I didn't have internet. Like, we finally got broadband when I was in college.
Well, I can't say that. For a very short period when I was really young, we had internet. But that was like when my mom was in school. So we were never allowed to use it because she was always like, doing work and stuff.
Not DSL. I had dial-up. What was I saying?
Dial-up.
Yeah.
Yeah. DSL is the good stuff, dude.
We got DSL when I was in college. But yeah, I had So access information just back then, it just wasn't. Which is crazy because it's not like we're talking in the 80s or 70s. Like this is 2006, 2005 for me.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I graduated from high school in 2011. So that means that I didn't get reliable home internet until like 2010, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like I had a phone, but it wasn't a smartphone, and I didn't have an iPhone or anything until I went to college, you know? It just wasn't a thing for me. So right.
Same.
Yeah, it was
same.
Just totally different world. Super crazy. So and that's what I'm saying. Like you exist in a vacuum. So it makes sense that you didn't, you know, understand all that at face value at first.
I think why going back to real quick to touch on like why I wanted to do my film podcast, why am I the person to do it? Why am I allowed to do it? I think I'm one person that's allowing myself to say what I thought. I feel like when we talk about films and point out the wrong in Pocahontas, the wrong in, you know, certain movies, Dances with Wolves, The White Savior, you know, we look at that and then we like almost strike ourselves from we strike that memory from existence of like, yeah, not only do I not like that movie, I never liked that movie. And why? And I don't hear people do that. I hear people just like condemn it and say like, damn it to hell. And that's it. And I'm like, say what you want about Pocahontas. I saw it when I was 7. I saw it twice in theaters with my family. Like you can't tell me Colors of the Wind isn't a good song. You know, like there's just like, as much as I don't like it, like Irene Bedard was the first Disney princess to not need a man to save her in a Disney movie. You know, there's like things that are still good that we can hold on to, but you need to recognize where the misrepresentation is occurring and then make a decision for yourself. And that's really I think there's too much broad brushing of just like, there's this one thing that's bad, so the whole thing is bad. I think what I want to do is just educate and talk about it from my perspective, what I'm fleshing out, what I'm seeing in these movies, and just allowing people to make a determination for themselves. And that's why part of the reason why I use my son as like my gauger. Am I going to show this to my son? Keeping it very much on me of like, I'm not proclaiming that this should never be viewed by anybody. I'm saying in my personal house, in my family, this is what I'm going to do moving forward.
Yeah, yeah. And you're trying to have that conversation so other people can make that decision for themselves. That makes sense.
Yeah. And I think that like Dartmouth experience that I talk about, you know, me and my wife, we don't really, she went to Dartmouth too. That's where we met. So we have these conversations occasionally, and we kind of just try to almost like forget it because it was so, we see those same conversations happening now with obviously in different avenues and with regards to different issues, but that idea that I'm not affected, therefore it doesn't exist, like that's the problem in film too, is we're the only people that are calling foul on instances of misrepresentation. And so I think part of the reason why I wanted to make this podcast is to get really non-native people too to start talking about these things. And there are movies that are on the nose, as I mentioned, like native movies like Smoke Signals and Dances with Wolves, Last of the Mohicans. And then there are other movies that frame people's minds of what representation is by not even knowing they're going to see a native movie. And those contribute to it too. And that's, you know, like Twilight.
Yeah, stuff like Twilight. Mandalorian's the hot one right now that everyone's talking about being, you know, cowboys and Indians. Yeah.
I wanted to talk to somebody about this, and you seem like you have great perspective on this. Why are natives so fascinated with the Mandalorian? Like I'm sure you've seen it on like native Twitter, native Facebook. They put the baby in like cradle boards and wrap them in Pendleton blankets, and they'll, you know, Photoshop all kinds of stuff.
I don't know. I'm part of this like Discord, and they say that Baby Yoda is native, and I just haven't gotten into it and read about it, and I just don't know why. So that there's that aspect, but also it's very much a space Western, and native peoples, I don't know, they're just suckers for Western sometimes. I grew up watching them, you know?
Yep. 100%.
It was just part of my, yeah. So I think that's part of it too. Cause it very much is like when you get to like the core of the show, just the cowboys and Indian show. I mean, that's a very reductionist view of the show, but I think like that, those are some of the elements that contribute to it, but I really don't know, man.
That's a good idea.
It is very interesting though.
It's a weird phenomenon because I just watched it, you know, and I like unplugged from my world and went back to just doing my thing. And then now that I started the podcast, I'm on those like areas of native Instagram, native Twitter because of people who I follow. And so you go to your explore page, you'd go down certain hashtags or just, and I'm just like, where did this come from? Like what's going on here?
I have no idea. You should start doing like a guest thing every once in a while and bringing people on that know what that is. Cause that'd be cool to hear about. I'd love to hear, cause I don't understand the phenomenon either. Cause I think the show's kind of boring personally. I know I'm going to like get hate for that, but I don't think it's that good.
You probably are going to get hate, man.
I don't think it's that good a show. And that's personally because I don't think TV is very good. I just think it's boring. So I'd like to know a little bit more about that too, because I don't know. I just don't get it.
Well, and that was the hope, you know, I have like a goal list on my board, you know, it's like have a native actor, actress guest or a film, somebody in film as a guest, one episode a week and then get on the film reviews list for iTunes. Those are like my goals. I have the immediate ones for the show.
Let's talk about your show. That's interesting. So get on the film review list. What does that mean on iTunes?
Yeah. So if you go down to the subcategories in iTunes under TV and film, they have like all these subcategories like TV critic, like film reviews. And so they like break it out into these different really subcategories off of TV and film. And the one that I fall under is film reviews. So my goal is to get enough traffic, and really it's based on like a trending and views and rating system, is that when you click on film reviews, there's a list of about 20, you know, it's a kind of carousel of podcasts, but it's based on trends. So if you're constantly trending, you'll always be there. So that's like how people that are casually browsing could come across my podcast. And it's really just from a visibility standpoint. And so that's my personal goal, is to get on that list so people can be like, oh, hey, you know, Native Film Talk, I wonder what that is, and just listen to it.
I don't think about my show like that at all.
No,
no. It's so interesting to talk to another host because I don't care who listens or if anyone listens.
Really?
I mean, I share it all and I put it out there because, I mean, I'm doing it, so I should. But I've never thought about how to get on lists or trick algorithms or anything like that, because this is very much a personal thing for me. And also it's, like I said, the only person I care about that really listens is across the hallway. Right. And I walk into his room and he's listening sometimes. And that's that's what it is for me.
That's awesome.
It's really interesting that
different motivations, you know, for doing podcasts. Mine is just really get as many, is really listen, have a reach that's outside of my community, you know, and really just to get dialogue of, I would love for listeners to tell me, like, I don't think the movies that you do are interesting. Why don't you do this instead? Or I would love, like, when people write into my email or send me a message on Instagram, they're like, hey, I just saw this movie, you should do this, you know, and this person is from Alaska or from Canada. Yeah. And they're like, hey, you know, have you ever heard of Boy? Or have you ever heard of, you know, one of the listeners suggested Blood Quantum. Never heard of that movie. So, like, I'm trying to not be the res boy again, like stuck in my vacuum. Cause when you're a dad, you know it. Like, I've only been a dad a year and a half, but you're like you're in a time capsule and the world just continues to go by, you know? So I'm going to miss a lot of stuff.
Well, that's COVID too. It's double bad right now because of COVID.
100%. And so, I would love to just interact with the listeners and have them tell me what they would like to hear. And,
That makes sense.
I think ultimately too, like I'm just doing the show that I wanted to do, and I just want people to hear it. That's all it is.
I just see people that inspire me like you, and I just ask them if they want to talk. And most of the time y'all say yes, you know?
I'm always hungry to meet another native podcaster and just talk to them, like what their motivations were. I'm sure you've talked about this, but like, do you have like podcast influencers that like you heard that and you were like, oh yeah, maybe I should do that?
You mean from Native America?
No, just in general. I mean, what influenced you to do a podcast instead of a YouTube channel or instead of writing a blog?
Well, I'm at first, a big part of it was I am like very self-conscious about being light-skinned and claiming native stuff and talking about native stuff. So I didn't want to be, you know, have my face out there with it because I don't, you know, I see how vitriolic native Twitter can be towards people that are, I don't want to say like in general, but when someone falsely claims to be native, you know, stuff like that. And I didn't want to fall into that trap, even if accidentally.
No, I understand.
And then secondly, I like talking, you know, and a podcast is a very easy way to talk and not have to put a lot of, cause this is really shitty, but not have to put a lot of effort into like the post-production work and stuff. Cause I'm not trying to sit here and edit a YouTube video for 14 hours, you know?
100%. I get that. And I was the same way because I feel like over film reviews, there are opportunities to do more in YouTube reviews, sure. But I pre-COVID, my commute was like 45 minutes to half an hour, depending on traffic. So that was like podcast time. And I'm just like people, I want people to just be going about their regular day. I feel like YouTube requires so much of people's attention, undivided attention. I just wanted something they could just listen to in the background, you know, if that's what they wanted to do. If they wanted to make a meal, because that's what I do. I'll listen, I'll make dinner, wash dishes, and listen to a podcast and mow the lawn or do some yard work, you know. And so that's what I wanted to do, is like have people just hang out. And just too, to like pause and be like, hey, what do you think about that? And just talk about it. And, you know, that's what I wanted. But that's pretty cool, man. I respect the... You're just doing the show that you want your son to listen to. Like that's admirable.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't have any like illusions of being able to support myself with this podcast. I don't have any sort of like visions of grandeur of this being, you know, something as big as like Joe Rogan or whatever. No, I don't, you know, I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about like a view count. It's cool every once in a while when I get an episode that gets, you know, more views than the other, just because of whatever the guest is or whatever. But there's a steady stream of dedicated listeners, and that's cool enough for me, man. They message me and ask about the show sometimes and talk about guests. And I think that's,
cool. I implore you to reconsider just because you do have such good content. I think maybe not look at it from the sense of, self-promotion for the sake of notoriety, but self-promotion for the sake of getting other people to hear these conversations. Because like I listened to the, is it Desba Rose episode, the native cosplayer? That was a great episode, man. That was a solid episode. Thanks, I learned a lot. I wish more people would hear that, you know? And
Desba's cool, man. She's super cool. And if you haven't listened to that, go support Desba, dude. She is awesome. And she has cool stuff going on in her life.
100%. And she talked a lot about the issues of like representation that really nobody really talks about with, with cosplayers, of like just her, apprehension to even do a Navajo Ray, of like the backlash she might receive. I thought that was a real interesting thing that I think because it was received so well, you would not have even considered that would have been a concern of hers. But that's the kind of stuff that when I heard that, I'm just like, man, no kidding. That really could have gone south, but it didn't. Obviously it was well received and now it's like super famous for it, at least in Indian country. So, yeah, I mean, these are great conversations, man. I think you should reconsider just for the sake of getting more people to hear this.
Yeah, well, to like speak to that point, it's really easy, like in hindsight, to say something like that about Desba, right? About how, how could she be scared? People loved Navajo Ray, right? Like, but when that's kind of the same phenomena I was experiencing when I first started the show. Like now that I know people like the show, because I've had like a lot of positive feedback from random listeners and stuff, I'm a little more open about talking about being light skinned and talk about, you know, I'm not a tribal member. And I mean, I grew up here my whole life. So as far as I'm concerned, I think that's bullshit, you know.
Bro, you're native.
It's a word. Yeah, you're native. Exactly. It's a word.
Even if you ever had an identity crisis and you call, you're like, Ian, I'm not. And I'm just like, bro, trash every mirror in your room. I don't ever want you to look at your skin color again. Like, don't ever use that as a measure. You are native, bro. You know, like, you're 100% native, you know,
I appreciate that, man. But I've never doubted it. I mean, except for like early in my life, but that's when mm-hmm. everyone doubts their identity overall. That I think that's when it's healthy to have identity crises. I've never doubted it outside of, you know, those couple of years of just not knowing what was what, you know, because mm-hmm. I went out to college at NAU and I started studying Spanish my freshman year. And that was because my girlfriend at the time, her mom only spoke Spanish. I started studying it, but then I was like, just kept going with it and exploring it because I didn't know what it was to be Mexican either. And that's my other half, right? Mm. Is Mexican. So I was like studying that. And then that's kind of also fed into me in my off time because I wasn't studying native stuff, but talking with native peoples, learning as much as I can from my community because I wanted to be, that was when my identity crisis was like, it wasn't a crisis. I knew what I was. It was when I wanted to explore deeper what that meant, you know, but it's been very interesting because I don't know, man, like identity in Native America is tied definitely to that piece of paper. And, you know, what do you do about it? You know, it's just tough.
Well, I think if we could get movies and television shows made out of that, but more books that talk about it, because I'm sure there are books that talk about it. You know, I think that giving us the opportunity to tell those stories too, and not rob those from us, because there are, an example, Windtalkers, like I know about this example, so I'll talk about it real quick, but the fact that they needed to use an established actor like Adam Beach, this isn't a slight on Adam Beach. This is a slight on them not casting a Navajo for probably the most important Navajo tale in U.S. history outside, you know, in a positive light anyway, the Co-Talker story. They needed somebody established. They needed somebody that they were comfortable with. And it had to be second to an actual actor that they were comfortable with, who was Nicolas Cage. So like Adam Beach was the supporting actor and he wasn't even Navajo. And so I think that we need to be behind the camera to tell our own stories, to get funded, to tell our own stories and cast the people that we want to be in it. And there are casting directors that I know out there that are responsible, like Native American casting directors, like maybe not Native themselves, but they are like responsible in how they go about casting Native people. Like you said, it makes sense to like, oh, I need Navajo people for this. I'm going to go to the res. Or I need like Cherokee people. I'm going to go to Cherokee res. And that's where movies like Last of the Mohicans got it right. I want to say, gosh, the number off the top of my head loses me. I think there were 900 Native extras, and they were all from like the That's Cherokee sick. Nation.
That's dope.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So every yeah. Native you see on there, they're like actually Native, you know, from the res. And it's just like, that's awesome.
That's so badass. I didn't know that. See, I haven't seen. I also don't think about movies in the same way you do. Right. You know, I don't look at it from this like analytical lens at any point during the movie. So when I see Last of the Mohicans, the only thing I could think of is like, oh man, this guy's going to roll under this tongue and then he's going to swing his axe. You know, I'm just like sitting there. I'm like that guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's why my movie would fall under, that's why my podcast would fall under film reviews. You know, you're kind of already looking for that type of show. Whereas yours, it seems like it's very broad. Like you have your character, I'm sorry, your characters, your guests are from all over, you know, from all walks of life, from all different industries. So unfortunately, journal sounds about right. Even though it's not as descriptive as we think we would like, it makes sense.
Yeah, no, I want to have like weird people on, man. I keep looking for weirder and weirder people to get on, but I don't know. I guess we'll just see how it goes, but.
No, you are all over the place. I love it. Like in a good way. It's in a good way. You had like Natalie Franklin on, like she's from Tube City too. So me and my wife listened to that episode. Like and you had gosh. Who was the silversmith that made like the metal art?
Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, he went to high school with me. I think I recognized him when I saw his pictures.
I think that was like my third or fourth episode, and that's like my favorite episode.
Really?
I love that. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that episode so much.
I went and looked him up because he was on your episode list. I'm like, Tyler Johnson. I feel like I know that name. And I looked it up. I saw his jewelry. His like metal jewelry was insane.
He's incredible.
So you're doing great work, man. I hope you reconsider your reach and try to, you know, get more listeners, because more people should hear these stories. Your son is going to love them for sure, but I think they should hear more.
Yeah, man. Well, I, you know, I appreciate that. Thank you. And I mean, let's get some reach for your stories real quick. Let's plug your show before I forget, because we're coming up to the end here. Okay. And let's plug all of your stuff real quick, and then I'll continue my thought, because I don't want to lose it.
Yeah, it's okay. So my podcast is called Native Film Talk. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. So we come out with an episode every Saturday morning. So at this point, we've launched 10 episodes, and we've done movies like Parasite, Smoke Signals, Wind Talkers, Last of the Mohicans, Blood Quantum, Pocahontas. And I try to do a moment in history, in Native film history or Native representation in media. Last month was the 1973 Oscars, when Sasheen Little Feather accepted the Oscar refused to accept the Oscar on behalf of Marlon Brando. And the episode coming out this Saturday is Wes Studi winning the honorary Oscar for a body of work. And then next month, I'm going to do Charlie Hill on the Richard Pryor Show as the first Native American comedian to be on national television. So listen.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's incredible. And sorry if that was abrupt. I usually cut it and put it somewhere in the episode that makes sense.
Oh, okay.
So that it,
that's okay.
Because I want you to have followers from this, you know?
Yeah, I know. I appreciate grow. That.
So, yeah.
I get it.
But anyway, man, I don't know what to say, man. You've been a very impressive guest. I don't know, man. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate you.
No, thanks a lot. This is great. This is great. I didn't know it, you know, a part of my excitement from doing podcasts is I wanted to meet more Native people like me who wanted to, because, you know, when you're in Indian country, you are in a vacuum sometimes. And like when you're looking on, you don't know the right keywords to look for. Some people have podcasts like with their Native language in the title, so you're not going to know to find those. I would have never thought Nomad Cast would be. I would have thought when I typed in like Nomad in the, like for podcast to search, like people's like van life or living in a tent come up, you know, like, so dude. I would have never found your podcast.
I love that. So. I love that. That's so funny.
Yeah.
You look it up. People's like, you know, buying like the minibuses and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Yeah. 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 Like living out of their van, doing a podcast out of there, traveling across the world and, or living out of the tent or living out of a car, you know, being nomadic people. So I never would have found your podcast. So this has been exciting to like reach out and meet, because you just by virtue of doing a podcast, you find other people that do podcasts, other Native podcasters. And that's been the best
part. That blew my mind when that first happened to me, because I was so sure I was going to be the only person doing podcasting in Native America. You know, this was like 3 or 4 years ago when we were first starting to do research for it. And then we all of a sudden found like 15 podcasts, you know, and it's really funny. I've actually talked to or messaged them about it, but the show Breakdances with Wolves was like the original name that I had. That was the name that I came up with originally. And when I found that it was taken, I was really upset.
That was going to be your name?
Yeah, that was what I wanted to call my show. Because I'm a big hip hop fan.
What a coincidence.
Yeah. Well, it's when you think about it, it's really not that clear. It's, I don't know. I understand how it happened. You know, there's only so many like Native things at the time that were like pop culture phenomena that you could, that's kind of what I was trying to capture.
It is kind of an easy pun to land on, but yeah, if you're a hip hop lover and especially if you're a B-boy, you know, that's like easy for you.
Yeah. I'm not a B-boy. But I like rap, and like, that was a big thing for me, is I wanted to try to infuse that, because I wanted to try to attract Native rappers. Because at first, I wasn't telling my co-host this, but at first I really wanted to do like interviews with a lot of musicians and stuff, because I'm just into that. But as it's evolved, I've kind of grown away from that. So I'm glad it worked out this way. But
do you still want to do that? Get Native?
Yeah, I do. I
like Frank Wallen and people like that.
Yeah, I've been on the low planning like a Native hip hop event in February. An interview series with a bunch of like rappers and stuff. If I can get enough interest. And I want to do it in February in conjunction with like Black History Month and stuff I wanted to bring on, like, I've been like messaging people about it and stuff, but it's just, it's hard with COVID going on and stuff. I can't just go and drive to someone and, you know, figure it out, get it all done. But yeah, we'll see how it goes, man. I'm excited to see if it works out because I'm into that stuff.
I'm interested already. So I hope it works out. And if it does, I'll definitely watch it or listen to it, whatever it becomes.
I appreciate that. Well, we're coming up on like my longest episodes now. So I think we'll start to cut it out here, but
okay. Sounds good, man.
But man, for real. Oh, wait, I got to know. What's the story with your middle name?
Oh yeah. So my middle name is Claw. So Claw is my great grandfather's name. His name is Klopiet, which is left hand. So Claw in Navajo means left hand. So he's Claw Left Hand Begay. And when the government came, they started handing out names. They were like, what's your name? Klopiet. And then you're like, Claw Begay. It's close enough. And then so they named him Claw Begay, and at least the English version. And after him, if he were the firstborn male in the family, if you were the firstborn child and you were male, you were given the middle name Claw. So I'm the third. Yeah. So my grandfather had a brother that had a middle name Claw, and then his oldest was Claw. So I'm the third and my son is the fourth. And coincidentally, we are all left-handed.
We all came out. God, no way.
Yeah. We all came out left-handed. So that's a pretty cool story.
That's spooky, scary.
My son's,
man,
only a year and a half, but you know, you can clearly tell his dominant hand is his left.
Or it better be, right?
Yeah. I'm like, don't mess it up. Don't mess up the streak. Yeah. You know,
this is our legacy.
My wife really grilled me about that. She was like, don't be disappointed. You know, don't be like expressing disappointment. But yeah, it's his dominant hand right now. And even if it isn't, it's just a cool thing to say, like, hey, your great great grandfather, you have the same name as him. Like, carry that with you. It's something that he can always have.
Yeah.
You know, regardless. Yeah.
That's something that we talked about in the last episode, like the power of language, you know, mm-hmm. and like the respecting that, because like people that existed for generations before you even knew there was a planet, you know, before there was ever a United States, were using these words, you know, mm-hmm. there's a lot of power in there. You got to make sure you're respecting it. 100%. I agree with you, man. I think so, man. I think we see a lot of things. Maybe if we don't have the same opinions, we're very eye to eye on the way the world works.
100%. Yeah. That's why, yeah.
Well, anyway, man.
That's how natives think, bro. Don't let anyone tell you different.
Yeah. Well, anyway, man, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for listening. This has been another episode of Nomadcast, and this was Ian Claw Allison, and please go listen to Native Film Talk. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Have a good one.
All right. Bye.